Welcome to the Bargy Maroon podcast. We've got a special guest today. We've got Paul Ritchie with us, and we're going to be asking him a number of questions about the past, the present, and some stuff on the future. Paul, how are you doing?
Great, pal. Very, very good. Thank you.
Fantastic. Bit of a time delay between us. How's it going on in America?
Very, very similar to the UK and Scotland, I can imagine. As I said, it's very frustrating just now. As I said, I think we're a few steps ahead of you guys with regards to the lockdown. We're the social isolation stands, but we're not isolated to one or two trips outside the house per day. As I said, all the parks and the beaches and everything else is closed. But as I said, we do have a little bit of freedom, which is nice in the current circumstances.
I was talking to Sidney MacDonald the other day, and he was telling us the things that he was doing to try and keep fit. I was exhausted just listening to him, to tell you the truth. I contacted him the other day to do this toilet roll challenge, and basically got hold of his dad, and his dad said, oh, he's just gone out for a 10-mile run. He'll do it when he gets back. So this lad basically did 10 miles and then come back and did a keepy up here. He wasn't even out of breath, Paul. It was sicking him.
Oh, to be young again. I say, we don't do that far. As I say, we are currently in the day. Me and my wife are currently got a little schedule. So we're 67 miles walk, run, jog. Obviously, my wife's pregnant just now, so we've just got to keep her on a level playing field. But we do our best. The weather's good, so we're out every day. You know, we've got a dog as well, which allows us to walk an extra 4 or 5 miles. So from that side of things, we're keeping fit that way. But our gym in our apartment complex is closed. The swimming pool in our apartment complex is closed. So we're living the life, but within our own apartment complex at the moment.
And what are you doing with the football training? Have you got the players on a regime?
Yes, we do. We've got, as I said, I'm academy director at a local youth club. So we've got 4 underage boys, obviously, you, 17s, 15s, 13s and 14s. So we've got them on a daily Zoom schedule. We bring each team in for 45 minutes every day, Monday to Friday. We set out, as I said, the weekly schedule stays the same. Monday, Wednesday is a sort of tactical session. We go over videos of their own games and then professional games. Tuesday is a fitness session. Thursday is a technical session where we do some ball rhythms and ball skills together. And then we have a group quiz on a Friday. So, as I said, over here in the States, it's a pay-as-you-play model. So what we're trying to do is keep these kids engaged to keep the parents paying. Because if not, we'd be out of job, unfortunately.
Yeah, difficult times, it really is. And I think that's all over the world now. Let's get into the football questions. Now, I can't get a Hearts player on here without bringing derbies into it. So basically, tell us about, do you really get up for these games? Is it really, you're a Hearts fan as well. So going on, most players are putting one over on Hibs. So you've got a good record against them.
Yeah, I did. As I said, I think every Hearts player's got a good record over Hibs. That's just the way it is. But as I said, being a Hearts supporter and watching Hearts for 12 to 15 years before I played for them, as I said, I knew what it means to the supporters because, as I said, I was a supporter at a very early age. And they were, as a supporter, they were the best games to go and see, to go and watch, to be a part of. And when you got that opportunity, as I said, as a younger player, playing in the BP Youth Cup, playing in the third team, East of Scotland Reserve League. And as I said, every time you played against Hibs, it was a massive, massive honour to be part of it, no matter what level. And when we got that opportunity to do it in the first team, as I said, it was fantastic. As I said, we had a lot of good days against Hibs. I can remember a New Year's Day game when we beat them 4-0 at Easter Road, as I said, which was always nice. But the one game that actually sticks in my mind, it was a game that they beat us, that 98 season when we lost at Easter Road 2-1, Vetti and Kevin Harper. Because that was a turning point in our season with regards to our league form. And if we'd won that game at Easter Road that day, I honestly think we could have won the league that year. And as I said, that's the one game against them that really sticks in my mind because, as I said, we were having a fantastic season. Everybody expected us to go down there and win. We were still up for it. On that day, we were second best. And that really, really hurts, as I said, because I think, as I said, we're going to win the Scottish Cup that year. But I think if we'd won at Easter Road that day, we could have potentially won the league.
I love listening to Hearts players talk with passion. Recently just interviewed my massive Hearts fan, Claire Delworth, who plays for Hearts Women. And honestly, I mean, we're doing this as a podcast, so this is going to go out as our voices, but I can actually see you. But I was talking to her, just the smile on her face when she was talking about pulling on a Hearts jersey, about pulling on a Hearts jersey, but also all the games that she's seen as a kid. So I'm going to take you back as a Hearts fan. So tell us, I can tell you from my point of view. So as it's probably, you've gathered, I've got an English accent. There's not much, there's not much Edinburgh about me, but my family are from Preston Pans. So that's where the Hearts connection comes from. So for me, going along to the games, I talk around about 90% of the time with different cousins and uncles and aunties, and every now and again I catch a bit of the game. So that's my connection. I love getting along to the games. It's about family. It's about entertainment. Yourself, how did you become a Hearts fan?
My dad and his family were from Kirstorfin, and they lived there. My grandparents, my grandma and granddad lived there for all their lives. So they were brought up, as I said, my dad and my grandfather were brought up Hearts supporters. And I ended up staying with my grandparents. Me and Alan McManus used to stay there in Diggs when we were in the ground staff. But it was probably when I was four or five, I went to visit my grandma and granddad, took me for the weekend. My granddad used to work in the railway. So this Saturday afternoon, I thought he was taking me to the railway. We jump in the car and we park the car at Haymarket. And then we start walking. And he takes me to Tynecastle. We played St Mirren that day, and I think it was a 0-0 draw. That was my first ever game I went to. And then from there, I was hooked, as I said. And at that young age, I went as often as I possibly could with my dad and my granddad. But it was when I became sort of old enough to go by myself. As I said, I used to jump on the Hearts, Glenrothes and Kirkcaldy supporters bus. And I used to go home and away. And this was before I actually had signed schoolboy forms and ground staff forms for Hearts. So, as I said, that was part of my week, part of my ritual. It was fantastic just to go on a supporters bus all over Scotland to watch them. And we had some great trips and some good games and some bad days. But as I said, that was my memories of growing up as a Hearts supporter.
You've got the same look on your face as Claire had, where you start to go back because it really does mean something to you. And then going out there as a Hearts player, you feel it, don't you? You've got to feel it more.
Yeah, you do. And that's the thing, as I said, I think not being disrespectful to the current Hearts squad and how things have been going in the past. I think when a local lad's brought up, as I said, involved and supporting the kid and being part of their life since a very early age, when you're fortunate enough and honoured enough to be given that opportunity, it's the best feeling in the world. As I said, it still gives me butterflies and goosebumps. As I said, I think the Hearts have been part of my life since, as I said, 5 years old, and I'm 45 this year. So, as I said to you, I've been a supporter through times where they weren't overly successful, but as I said, they were still my team. It was never a case of going and supporting someone else. I was always going to watch Hearts through thick and thin. And then, as I said, growing up through the ground staff and working in the, doing the boots in the stage, cleaning the stands, and then getting that opportunity to play. As I said, it's every schoolboy's dream. And I think this is where it's lost nowadays with regards to finding these young players who've got the real appetite to become a professional footballer. As I said, it's very difficult because this day and age is different from how it was back when we were younger.
Yeah, I mean, you just used the word dreams there. So basically, you've played against some top players, being a top player yourself, and you're out in America, so you know who I'm going to talk about. Has he bought into a club, or has he put money into a club?
No, he owns it.
He owns it outright. See,
yeah, he owns it.
Where did you go wrong? Where did you go wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. I made one or two wrong decisions and then ended up on the wrong side of things. Yeah.
But we've got it on, but you're marking David Beckham in Euro 2000. Hard to mark?
Very, very difficult. As I said, I don't think anybody realises how athletic and how tall he is. As I said, Beckham's 6'2", fit as a fiddle and runs like the wind, but he's a fantastic talent. And to be honest, I think that day, as I said, I was never renowned to be as a left-back. As I said, it wasn't my forte. As I said, I'd much rather be in the centre of the park where I've got people around me. But in all honesty, I think that day was as disappointing as it was. And he did set up the two goals from set pieces. But with his, as I said, I can remember back and he never had much influence on the game from open play. So it was a positive. As I said, me on the ball going forward, I was a non-entity. It was just basically man mark him, stop him doing what he was good at doing, which was whipping balls in the box. Unfortunately, I couldn't stop him whipping in a corner and a free kick for Scholes to score. But I think in open play, it was a test. And I think, as I said, I've been very, very fortunate to have played in international country and played in the Premiership. But he was an outstanding talent, an absolute pleasure to play against. As I said, his jersey smelt nice. It was just one of those ones where it's just incredible. So at the end of the game, it was one of those ones. I wasn't, and Martin Matson for 90 minutes, and he wasn't getting away from me at the end of the game. So got his jersey, got it framed, and it's pride in place in my house now. So as I said, it was a disappointing day, but something that can never be taken away. And as I said, an honour to have played for Scotland and play against arguably one of the best players in the world for what he was good at.
Definitely. I mean, my background's sort of northwest England, so I went to see him at Preston when he got loaned out as a kid. And he was the same there. If there was a dead ball situation, you were in trouble, even as a kid.
Yeah.
An incredible talent. Tell us about your goals. So smashing a ball in, and again, I'm going to take you back to Claire's interview, smashing a ball in as a Hearts fan. What's that like? I mean, I can only dream about these things.
Ah, phenomenal. As I say, I think I never got many. I think I got 7 or 8 for Hearts, as I said, but I can remember them all. As I said, Kilmarnock was a good opposition. I think I scored 3 against Kilmarnock. Scored a couple of goals on the way to win the 98 Scottish Cup. I think my favourite goal was a goal against Ayr United in the quarterfinals at Tynecastle. As I said, great first touch for the centre-back and then a hoof in the top corner, which was pleasing. But yeah, as I said, it's always great to score. As I said, to play professionally is a fantastic opportunity, and I'm grateful for that. To score for the team you supported as a boy, as I said, it is what dreams are made of. And then, as I said, I'm very, very fortunate to have achieved what I did in my career and play a big part of that in Hearts in that 98 season as well. As I said, as a supporter, to do and play as many games as I did, as I said, nobody can take that away from me.
Talking about the 98 season, we all like, can't be serious all the time. Tell us, we want to get us into the dressing room a bit. Who were the pranksters? Who were the crazy people?
Jose Katongo was there. Jose, Neil Poynton, Bruno when he arrived. As I said, the changing rooms when we had that sort of 96 to 98 period were incredible. But as I said, the older ones were moving on. We Robbo, as I said, the older ones there was always a respect, and there was always a real looking up to Gary Mackay, John Robertson, Jules Rousset, Pasquale Bruno. But our young boys, when we came in, as I said, we came in with a group of 6 of us. Then when you look at McManus, myself, Gary Locke, Alan Johnston, Stuart Callaghan, Miles Hogarth, as I said, Roddy McKenzie, Matt Bradley, there was a group of kids who grew up together. And I think that was, as I said, the grounding that we got when we were younger. As I said, I think we were very, very fortunate to be involved in with Sandy Clark, who gave us a fantastic grounding. But as we grew older, we became more confident. And some of these guys, some of the pranks that we used to play on Sandy and the first team players, we got our arses kicked now and again, but some of them were just better. Young boys to have the bollocks that we had to do some of the stuff we did when we were on the ground staff, I think was looking back, incredible. But as I said, they were the days. I know these things don't happen anymore, and the hazing and the so-called initiations are not allowed. But as I said, some of the stuff that we used to get up to was eye-opening.
It's a different game. I remember saying on a different interview to somebody, I mean, I'm getting on a bit. So I was saying to somebody a lot younger, and I described it as when football was a physical sport. And I think I was talking about a West Ham defender. So he started laughing and I was saying, honestly, there used to be real contact, but it was a different game back then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. As I said, I'm going to be honest, I was very, very fortunate to play. As I said, technically, I was never the most technically gifted player, as I said, but I had a heart, as I said, my attitude and application and work ethic was there. I would never shirk a tackle. Physically, I had a good spring, but technically now, as I said, I would find it very, very difficult to play the way the modern games played. As I said, I'm actually a better passer of the ball now at 45 than I probably was when I was 18, 19, 20, when I was playing professionally. I just think because now, you practice it that often when you're coaching the kids. As I said, your technique gets better. But back in the day, as I said, the game was different. As I said, there wasn't so much emphasis on the sort of technical side of things and the way you played. As I said, at professional level, as I said, you had a role and a responsibility as a central defender. And that was to stop the striker scoring. Get the ball. And I always remember Tommy McLean when I was younger, when he was just before he left, say, playing a reserve game. And his biggest quote was, Richie, you just win the ball and give it to Alan Johnston. Wherever he is. And that was that, and I thought to myself, you're right. As you say, play to your strengths. I could header the ball further and I could kick it. As I said, defensively, as I said, I would give 100%. But yeah, I knew, as I said, I was surrounded by a lot of talented footballers when we were playing in Party that year at Hearts, and it was a privilege to play with them.
Well, tell us, I mean, most people, if you ask them about favourite players, Robbo comes up. And I know with, I'll say this quietly, I know with Goggs, Craig Levein, probably not as a manager, but as a player, yeah. Comes up for yourself. I mean, going back to when you were a kid, your favourite players, people who sort of stood out, but also when you were playing, who stood out?
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate because when I was younger and watching, as I said, I then had an opportunity to work with these guys and look after these guys in the ground staff. As I say, for me, Alan McLaren was the one that, as I said, stood out for me. As I said, he was a type of centre-half at a young age when I used to go and watch him. Him and Craig, as I said, were a fantastic partnership, and obviously Robbo. But then, obviously, as I get older and get into the changing rooms, obviously, when I was a young YTS guy, Derek Ferguson was somebody that I had to look after, and I really, really admired him. Ali Mauchline, when he was at Hearts, Ian Baird. As I said, just the type of characters and the type of individuals that they were what epitomised Hearts at the time. And I think they were the type of characters that made Hearts successful. As I said, I think real blood and snotters. You know what I mean? Nobody is the real hard, hard people and nice, nice people off the field. But when you put them on the field, as I said, it was a different person. And I think that was the difference between where the club is now. We don't have any of those characters within the club. As I said, there's nobody in there who is willing to pull people together, roll up their sleeves and do it for other people, do it for the supporters. As I say, I feel the squad just now very, very selfish and not enough people in there who care about the club.
Which brings us on to your thoughts on the cup final of 98, which is all about rolling your sleeves up and doing what needs to be done. Tell us about your memories, what you can remember about that day.
Coming back on the bus at night, hammered drunk on that bus. we popped the sun, the big open, like the sun canopies, and we managed to get up. And there was that many people with the bus, wasn't it, going quick. But that's the main thing I can remember. I actually watched the game 2-3 weeks ago when they aired it on YouTube and Facebook. And just to go through it all again and be reminded of that, because at the time you don't remember. Right after it, you don't remember. As I said, all I remember is the build-up the week before and then after it. The 90 minutes in the game, until I watched the full game the game in full again a couple of weeks ago. As I said, you can't remember half the stuff that went on. And that was, looking back on it, that was a back-to-the-wall, dig it out, and all for one, one for all. As I said, we've got a fantastic start, as I said, and that probably gave us something to hang on to. Because if we didn't get that early goal, knowing that Rangers team at that time, as I said, we'd been there before and lost an early goal, and it was the Alamo. But getting that early goal, wee Mickey's penalty, as I said, gave us something to hang on to. And we had some strong characters and some real players in there who cared about each other and who cared about the club. And then from there, as I said, we rode our luck. But I think deep down we deserved it. I think over that period with Jim Jeffries and Billy, as I said, it was coming to something special. As I said, it was a fantastic day for the club and for the supporters. And as I said, just an honour to be part of it. As I said, going through it and watching it and that tackle at the end on McCoy's, that was close. As I said, it could have been a penalty, maybe should have been a penalty. Thank God they didn't have VAR in 98. But as I said, no, I don't think anybody could have actually held that against us. As I say, I think we'd been there 2 years before, 96, and we got our arses kicked. And then obviously in the 97... League Cup, I think we deserved to win that. That was a fantastic game to be involved in. As I said, me and Neil McCann that day was unplayable. But I think we got gradually better over the three games. And I think, as I said, nobody would ever take that away from us. I think, as I said, even the Rangers supporters and I think the Rangers management and players, Richard Goff, I do remember, after the 96, Scottish coming up to me and saying, "Don't worry, guys, your day will come." And I think, as I said, it was great to be a part of that. I said it was a long time coming, and having been a Hearts supporter 15, 20 years before that, I've never seen them any success to be part of something like that, which meant so much to so many people. Was fantastic.
It was. I mean, it was like a Rocky movie towards the end, weren't it? It was everybody was out on the feet, but I'm glad you brought it up because it was Rab Delworth that was asking, and I can say it on here. If your ass fell out with a McCoy, Stephen, looking at it all these years later on YouTube, tell us of the emotion of that.
Yeah. It's just, as I say, it was one of those ones. We knew, I think there was something different about us that day, as I said, because I know it would be in the past. As I said, I know, as I said, teams, when they lose a goal, it's a case of, oh, fuck, here it comes, here it goes. But I think there was something deep down with us all that day. I think we knew within ourselves, even in the build-up, we had that feeling that we were going to win. And I think, as I said, yeah, they scored, and then they're going forward. And I remember I think I tried to chest the ball back to Giles and misjudged it, and it dropped to Loudrup's feet, and he fucking toe-poked it by the post. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, that's it now, because 99 times out of 100, that's going in the back of the net. It didn't go in the back of the net that day. We're still alive. We're still in front. we're going to win this. And as I said, it was, as the minutes kept ticking on, it was like, deep down, I had a feeling we were going to win that day. And regardless of how the game went, scoring that first goal was, as I said, it was just something to cling on to, something to defend, because we know we could defend. As I said, when you look at the back four and the players that we had in there, we had players who had real steel and determination and a real character. So, as I said, one of the best days of my life, if not the best.
Oh, well, you've probably answered the next question then, because, I mean, you've had a career in England as well. So thinking about matches that you've played in, as a fan, there are certain teams. So my English team, West Ham, cannot stand Tottenham. Don't mind saying it. There's only one team that I just can't stand it, and it's Tottenham. And it's not very often that West Ham are going to get one over on Tottenham, but I love it when it happens. It's given that Hearts will beat Hibs. So it's never here there. But when we beat Celtic, I love it. I absolutely love it. So as a player, when you sort of look back and you think against a side that maybe you've got some score to settle. So is there a match that you can remember where there was a team or a player or somebody that you wanted to really put one over on? And it was a victory that you just thought, yeah, fantastic. I mean, like I said, I love it when my English side, West Ham, beat Tottenham. And it doesn't happen that often. And it's a given that we'll beat Hibs up north. And basically, when we beat Celtic, I love it. I absolutely love it. I celebrate it. How about yourself? Is there one that sort of sticks out?
I don't think there's every game special. I think every game that you win as a professional footballer is special. As I say, winning the Scottish Cup, the one game it does stick out is obviously the 3-0 win we had at Ibrox when little Alan Johnston scored a hat-trick. I think just to be part of something special like that when someone else does so well, as I said, on a day which, as I said, defined his potentially career. As I said, it's just to be part of someone else's joy was great. For me, as I say, any game that we won for Hearts was great. As I said, and I think, as you said, yeah, Hibs, we had the voodoo over Hibs. And as I said, I think in my time at Hearts, we only had one win over Celtic. And I don't think I played that game. I think I was suspended because we got sent off at Ibrox the weekend before. I think that's a game that obviously we were to bring in all the... I think Andy Thorne played. So I was sitting in the stand that day. So I think I've never actually had a victory over Celtic, as I said. But I think the one that sticks out is the Rangers game when we won 3-0 when Alan Johnston scored in 96. And I think the Scottish Cup semi-final against Falkirk as well stuck out. Because as I said, even though we were going so well in the league, everybody out with Hearts supporters and the club wanted Falkirk to win. Because as I say, Falkirk were going well that time and we country was on fire. And I think it was maybe, I think it was a 96 or 98 Scottish Cup. And people wanted Falkirk to beat Hearts. And I think when we got through that and we won that, it was like, yeah, well, here we go. Good. We're on to the next one.
And in terms of the transformation from player to coach, now, you're out in the USA. You're doing something right. Have you thought about going into management?
If the opportunity arises, I would love to. I think we're I've sort of done everything the wrong way around. As I say, when I finished playing, I became an assistant over here in America with Martin Rennie. We worked together with Martin in North Carolina for 2 years before moving to Vancouver as an assistant manager there. But knowing what the game's like, knowing what it takes to be successful and what defines success at a professional level, for me, as I said, it's the modern game doesn't allow for longevity in any sort of ways or means in a professional environment. At this moment in time, as I said, I've changed my focus through the years after doing my coaching badges while I ended the playing. It was always I wanted to be a manager. And I still do have aspirations, but I'm pushing on now. All these managers are becoming younger and younger. And as I said, if the opportunity comes along, yeah, great. I think I'm qualified enough. I think I've got enough knowledge in the game. But at this moment in time, just trying to help these younger kids become young adults and try and build them up for success in life through football. As I said, I'm having a real enjoyment of doing that. But yeah, I do miss the professional game. I miss everything about it, apart from obviously the negativity of the press and obviously the pressure that comes with being a manager or being part of a professional environment. As I said, I see players that I've played with and the stress that they go through if they're not successful is, as I say, it's a big, big part of your life. We've done that as a player, as I said, but if the opportunity comes along, then, as I said, I would definitely be up for it for at least one bash at the cherry.
Yeah, that's got to be sort of the goal for most people, I think, who are coaching, thinking going on to the next level. So if I could click my fingers now, put you on Zoom, you've played under, I've done my own work a little bit here, Paul, so I've done my own work. You've played under some fantastic coaches and some fantastic managers. If I could put you on Zoom now and you could pick somebody to get some inspiration from or some advice around the world? Who do you see as a good coach at the moment?
Oh, as I said, I think the majority of the coaches that I, as I said, worked for and I'm now older and retired. As I said, when I really look back, I look at Sam Allardyce and I look at Jim Jeffries and Harry Redknapp as the three that were probably the ones who basically drove my career. As I said, Harry at Portsmouth basically showed me what not to trust about a person, as I said, because obviously I went down there and done a good job at Portsmouth when I was at City and I was part of that squad that got promoted and it was, oh, we'll come back for you in the summer and put it, and it never happened. It was just a short-term fix. So I know how cutthroat, as I said, obviously professional football is. Sam taking me down to Bolton, and that was a fantastic environment. As I said, playing down there and playing in that environment, the Championship, with some fantastic players. But I've got to say, Jim and Billy, as I said, being a young player at a high level situation pressure, as I said, they didn't mollycoddle us. It was basically man up, guys, or you're off the bus. And I think the game's changed now. I think it's really difficult. I don't think you can do it well. I'm not saying you can do it. You've just got to be careful now, because I don't think the modern-day player could take the criticism or the man management skills of these guys in the past. And I think this is where a lot of teams are now, as I said, find it really, really difficult, because as a manager, sometimes now it looks as if the players are bigger in the club. And you've got to treat these players with kid gloves, and you've got to give them what they want. And the demands that these players are asking and putting on clubs and managers, as I said, is wrong. The power's definitely shifted to the player. But as I said, it never done me any harm. And I said, and I'm not that, as I said, I try to find the balance of working with this, I call it snowflake generation, and trying, as I said, give them the sort of education that I think will get them through life and help them with their soccer. Because we can't just give them everything they want, but we can't treat them the way that we were treated when we were younger, because that's just that's not the 2020s.
No, no, definitely not. I mean, very similar thoughts on things. You know, it can become a bit of a McDonald's society. When do you want it? Now. and Big Mac it as well. And we want it super duper. In terms of the present squad, so we've got some young players. So you work with youth. So we've got some young players who have been in the squad and been loaned out and then come back to the squad, and we've got some players pushing through. You're back in Scotland from time to time, or you'll see things on TV. What players sort of stand out for you?
I think it's been difficult. As I say, I think you look at, as I said, the way just what Craig did, and as I say, I think when Hearts had, Craig changed the way things were done at Tynecastle so many times. I think when we talk about Cochrane and one or two of the other younger ones who were in there, and I look at the players that they've got just now, and it's Hickey, they've got quality, but all these kids need is an opportunity and to trust them. And I know the game's changing, but at the end of the day, it's when we were younger, Jeffries trusted the younger players, as I said, and it was not just one or two games, it was over a course of a period of time. So, and I look at Cochrane comes in and does great, and then we don't see him again. He gets loaned out because the management at the time thought it'd be beneficial for his development. If he can do it once, he's not going to have the same game as he did every week against Celtic when he did and he scored and he bossed the midfield. But he shows what he can play at that level, and he shows he can excel at that level. So what, in my opinion, what you need to do is give him more of it. Keep feeding the kid that environment. As I said, and you will get, you'll get used to it. You'll become better. Yes, there'll be inconsistencies there. There'll be good games, there'll be bad games. You look at Hickey just now, as I said, and I think that's the one player who's been stuck by, and look what's the outcome of that's been. I think he's been the most influential player in the Hearts team over the last 18 months. And now the sort of looks that other teams are giving him is a credit to himself. As I said, he's performed well in a Hearts team who's not performed well. So, as I said, I think when these youngsters have got an appetite and a hunger, desire and a love for the club, in my opinion, they've got to play. Yes, it's not always going to be. But the one thing is, Hearts supporters are very, very, what's the word? As I said, they love their football club. They're not shy in telling you how they feel. So it takes a special type of person to be able to deal with that criticism as a young professional, because you're not always going to get the glowing reviews that you think you deserve. You're going to have to take it on the chin. And that's part of the paying public. They're more than right to air their grievances. And at this moment in time, Hearts aren't good enough, and the Hearts supporters are well within their right to tell them how it is. But these young players, if they can get through the rough times and the tough times and deal with that, their quality will shine through. So I just think and I hope that under a new management, he brought all the young players back. This coronavirus, COVID-19, came at the worst time. We don't know the future. We don't know where we're going to be. Until that's sorted, until we have some sort of stability and we know where, what direction the club's going, we can't really plan. We can't do nothing.
I totally agree with you in terms of the only way you're going to get better is getting game time. And it's a difficult one. I said it in an interview the other day. My job as a fan is to think I can manage better than any manager, I can coach better than any coach, and I can play football better than any professional footballer. It's the way of a fan. It really is. You can be messy one week and then have a bad game the next week and you're completely rubbish. Everyone forgets about it. But these kids, you know, bringing them back into the squad and getting them around players like Naismith, you know, where they're going to learn, and Boyce as well. They're going to learn the tricks of the trade and it can only develop them. I mean, if you wrap them up in cotton wool, they're never going to develop as a player.
No, you're right. They have to be exposed to the tough side of it as well. It's not going to be roses and rainbows and candy floss their whole career. They've got to sample the bad times to appreciate the good times. And we did that, as I said, I did that as a supporter and then as a young player. As I said, the grounding that you get through the rough times, as I say, sets you up to be successful in the long run. And as I said, that's the way forward for Hearts, because I think, in all honesty, it's about building a club round what they've got within the ranks. As I said, because too often, too many times, we bring in these players who we believe are going to be better for the club. They don't know what it's like to play for a club like Hearts. They don't know what it's like to play in Scotland. These younger kids have been brought up in this environment. So I don't understand why we continually look, as I said, yeah, we're all for bringing in one or two foreigners. We did it when we were younger. But they have to be the right type of person. We can't fill squads with bargains here and bargains there and this sort of money here. As I said, I understand the game's evolved, but there's a lot of people out there who are commanding a real, real good salary but don't deserve it.
And it's going to get onto my gripe this, Paul. I grew up with lots of Scots, good Scots playing in Scottish leagues, good Scots playing in English leagues, and they were good players. And that's because they got the chances in Scotland. They got their opportunities in Scotland. And I think that needs to happen more often than not. There's good talents playing on Scottish streets in Scottish parks. And we need to have a look at that.
Oh, for sure. I think you look at the players that are playing in the lower leagues and as I said, there's a real hunger and desire still from a young Scottish boy who wants to play professionally. Yeah, the game's changed, but the talent hasn't left. As I said, there's talent there. It's finding the right talent, it's nurturing the right talent, and then, as I said, it's staying true and being patient, because, as I said, it's a big, big ask for a 16, 17-year-old, because that's what we're talking about, as I said, 16, 17-year-old. Here in the US, they're still at high school. They don't talk about these kids coming out of college and playing professionally in the Major League Soccer here until they're 19, 20, 21. But by the way, back in Scotland, it's 16, 17. When you look at Hickey and you look at Cochrane, as I said, young teenagers, can they handle the environment? Yes, they can. So you play them. Look at Shanklin at Dundee United. He's played at Ayr United. I say, for me, he'd have been a perfect signing for Hearts. As I said, someone who has grown up in the lower division, scored at every level he's played, now he's been at Dundee United, as I said, and fair play to him, as I said. But there's undoubtedly more talent out there playing at the lower leagues, working extremely hard to achieve their dreams, and they just need that opportunity to play at the highest level. And as I said, I think when you get that mindset as a young player, it takes a lot of sacrifice to be there and see through the tough times and the hard times. But as I said, it's all worthwhile when you get someone who trusts you and believes in you and gives you the confidence that you need.
And that's something with the new gaffer that I think I was talking the other day and with on one of the interviews, and I was saying that his style is about allowing players to take chances, allowing players to improvise while they're out there and actually express themselves. And as a coach, that's something that you want, isn't it?
Of course it is. I think, as I said, I do understand, as I said, and not being involved in the professional game now for probably, 7 or 8 years, I understand there's demands from, obviously, directors, and it is about winning. As I said, playing it professional, the be-all and end-all is winning football matches. And then the added bonus is to basically play a style of football where the supporters are happy. But I think deep down, you ask any Hearts supporter, they would rather be pissed watching a poor performance and winning than playing well and losing. And deep down, as I say, I know a lot of people say, oh, we're hopeless, we don't play this. But realistically, there's nothing better than a 4:45 on a Saturday when you've won a game 1-0 or 2-1 and you're fucking hopeless, but you still won the game. And that's what it is. And I think we're all getting carried away just now is in the whole footballing world with the way that Man City play and the way that Pep's got these football teams playing. Yeah, in an ideal world with the best players in the world, yes. But let's be realistic. Our club's never going to be able to bring in the type of players that can play that type of football. So let's get back to what we were good at. Hearts have always been a real hard-working team with players who have got quality but plenty of strengths. As I said, I think the way Stendhal wants us to play his press, we need to find players who've got the ability and the engines to press the way he wants to press, because that's tough. And I understand why he's trying to do it. But when you look at some of the players that were playing, and I was back at Christmas time and went to Hamilton and watched them at St Johnstone, we didn't have the players in the positions to do what he wanted them to do and be successful. That's why Hearts were where they were. As I said, we didn't have the right players. It was square pegs and round holes. So it's all very well having a philosophy, but at a professional level, it's finding players who've got a real hunger and desire to win football matches, and then it's win at all costs. And then when you start to do that and it becomes a habit, then can we have a style of play that excites the fans and pleases the fans? Because I said to you, I think fans deep down would take 3 points week in, week out, regardless of the performance.
I love that. You talking like that reminded me of Sam Allardyce. So it is.
And I say, don't get me wrong, I'm slightly different as a youth coach, because I've got to, as I say, develop these kids to be comfortable. These players who are playing at a professional level are all comfortable and all very, as I say, technically, they should be at a level where they can play. As I said, it's just, I think we've come away from, as I said, some players have come away from the understanding what it takes to win a football match. As I said, it's a real hard work, desire and hunger, because you spend most of the time without the ball. And if you can master that and do better without the ball, as I say, the technical side of things and the tactical side of things will come. But it's really, don't get beat. I think you go out on a game on Saturday and the first thing is, we're not losing this game. The worst we can get is a 0-0, and then anything on top of that, we can build on. Hearts haven't been like that for the last 12, 18 months. Hearts have been a pushover, too easy to beat, and not enough players in there who really, really care about what they're doing.
I couldn't agree more. That's what's needed more at Hearts is heart. It's something that we haven't been seeing. Paul, I've loved talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Been a pleasure, Scott. It was a fantastic day.
You've got a tan. You're getting plenty of vitamin. A completely different environment to Scotland, I should imagine.
I don't know. I still speak to my kids. As I say, I speak to my boys on a daily basis. And every time I speak to my youngest one, he's outside. So I think I'm wearing. I speak to my parents. My dad, I called my dad the other day. I Skyped him. And he's browner than me. He's like, because he just sits in his back garden and he just loves sitting there in a little glass of red wine and watching the world go by. So I think the weather here's picked up now. It's beautiful, 80 degrees, but there's nowhere to go. So I'm glad I've got an apartment with a nice big balcony. So go out and have a couple of ciders now and enjoy the rest of the day.
You look after yourself, Paul. Thank you so much. We've been the boys in my room. You look after yourselves. With more podcasts coming soon, more interviews. Look after yourselves.